In 2012, Andrew Pryor was a Melbourne-based insurance underwriter by day and a passionate foodie by night. But 9 months in Paris sparked a personal gastronomic revolution. Soon, he quit his job, competed on MasterChef Australia, relocated to Paris, and enrolled in a course at the prestigious Le Cordon Bleu Institute. Andrew now teaches cooking courses from his French home in Western France. He hosts the Fabulously Delicious podcast and has just published a book called Paris, a fabulous food guide to the world's most delicious city. He joins us today on Travel with Rick Steves from his home, and he's ready to talk about the city of light, love, and good food. Andrew, bonjour.
Bonjour, Rick. Thank you for having me on.
It is so great to have you. And I got to say, I'm fascinated by an Aussie French foodie. You're from Australia. You fell in love with France. You moved in, and now you've got a career going on just turning people on to the wonders of French food. And you've got an Aussie background. Is that an advantage or a disadvantage?
For the language, I would say it's a disadvantage because it's really hard to get my way around those accents. But everything else, it's definitely an advantage because maybe the French government might not like Australia sometimes, but everybody else in France certainly does.
That's true. Aussies are just, you meet Aussies on the road and you guys know how to travel and you love the world and you always just bring a levity, a lightness, an accessibility to the joys of the world, I think. And that seems to be a theme of yours. Now, on the subtitle of your book, you call Paris the world's most delicious city. That's a big claim.
It is, and I think it definitely has become this. I wouldn't say it's always been that, but definitely it's become the world's most delicious city in my eyes. It's a lot more cosmopolitan in towards what it used to be, and I think that the French have definitely embraced good food in Paris, and so that means that all of the rest of us get to be the lucky recipients of it as well.
You know, you wrote in your book, "Is Paris a Foodie City?" Paris's food scene has for some time not been up to the standard of modern foodie cities around the world, at least in your opinion, nor has it in any way, shape, or form acquired the same reputation as French cuisine overall. Then you write, but after emerging from the worst of the global financial crisis about a decade ago, this has changed. So what has changed in Paris? Because, yeah, I've never thought of it really as, you know, the quintessential place to go for fine French cuisine, but it has changed in the last decade.
It has. And I think the first thing that changed was the fact that the French came back to Paris. And so a lot of French chefs, you know, they didn't, it was too hard to have a restaurant there, or it was supposed to appeal to the masses. And so they couldn't get to do the food that they wanted to do. And there just wasn't the French living there that wanted to appreciate good food like that. And so they left. They left to other countries. How many French chefs I met in Australia before the financial crisis when I was enjoying food? I met so many. Oh, yeah. Because it was so much easier to get a job there and to open a restaurant there that everybody was going to love their food. But a lot of those people came back and they've set up restaurants and places of their own right back in Paris.
Now, when I'm working on my guidebook to France, I counsel people, if you want to spend a lot of money on my scale for a dinner, $60, $70, do it in a small town rather than in Paris and you'll get a better value. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's still the case?
Definitely that is the case, but I would say that the difference for that is the menu du jour and also the lunch menu. So definitely a lunch menu at, say, a Michelin-starred restaurant, you can get the same quality food but for half the price. And so that's right. Where I would go. I would go to a Michelin-starred restaurant at lunch and be like the French, have the menu du jour.
You know, you're mentioning Michelin star. I have, when I'm updating my books, I really put a lot of focus on the restaurants. And what I find for my travelers is a Michelin rated restaurant sometimes can be the value we're looking for. And I think there's even a word for that, bib gourmand.
Bib gourmand, absolutely. There's even a newer one now that I think is really fabulous, and that is for the green rated restaurants. And so there's a bib, bib vert, I think they're calling it. And so that is something for sure that I would look out for.
Well, you just, because when you travel, you see that prestigious red plaque on a restaurant.
Yeah.
And if it has a star, you can pretty much assume it's going to be expensive, pretentious. You got to have a reservation. You got to dress up, all that kind of stuff. But if it's just Michelin rated, it's a little more casual, a little more accessible, half the price, but still really good cuisine, beautifully presented and with a smart clientele. I really like that nice presentation and a smart clientele without the pretense. By the way, Andrew, you mentioned the green-rated restaurant. Mm. I hadn't heard of that. I just know that in my mind, there's Michelin. When Michelin rates a restaurant, that's great. And if it rates a restaurant and it gets a star, that puts it in the upper echelon, and then they compete to get more stars. But how is green different than simply rated?
So the green restaurants are all about sustainability. So sustainability in their food, in their restaurant ideas. There's a lot of newfangled vegetarian, vegan restaurants that are getting that green rating as well.
So is a green rating something that can go with or without the red rating?
And absolutely, it's just, yeah.
It can be red and green, or it could be green without red.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that what the Michelin, in my opinion, what they're trying to do is that they're trying to appeal to more and more people and have more and more options for people, because basically that's what it was. It was a guide created for drivers that were driving around France
on where they're going to go.
I know, that were Michelin tires.
After being a contestant on MasterChef Australia, Andrew Pryor moved to Paris in 2016, where he now hosts a French food podcast called Fabulously Delicious. He also offers food tours and cooking classes from his home in Montmorillon, a couple hours by train from Paris in the countryside of Western France. His book is Paris, a fabulous food guide to the world's most delicious city. His website is andrewpryorfabulously.com. Now, Andrew, your book, it's just a fun book. It's just an easy-to-get-your-brain-around blitz through all the dimensions of eating and enjoying the food scene in Paris, whether it's in restaurants or in the markets. And I'd like to talk about a few things that you highlight in your book. First of all, department store food halls. This is really interesting for people, and kind of a surprise that we would recommend going in. A lot of times it's the basement, right? But just wonderful food halls in big modern department stores.
Paris does a lot of things well, and one of them is department stores and definitely food halls. I had the experience in 2015, it was, of going on a private tour of the Galeries Lafayette food halls with their historian. Oh, yeah. Not only was it fabulous because they gave us lots of free food, but also a lot of information about the department store, and that was really great. But these halls are just... they're having a really big revival in the last 10 years, and all the department stores have renovated them. And you'll often find they'll have different levels. So there'll be like one level that will have just the same things that you would find on a normal street in Paris. So your boulangerie, your patisserie, butcher, etc. Then another level will have where you will be able to buy food and take it home, but also buy it and have it cooked for you there. So, you know, it might be a poissonnerie, so they sell fish, but you can actually sit down at the table, choose the fish that you want, and have that made for you.
We should make this clear that these are department stores in Paris, or anywhere for that matter. They can be the Galerie Lafayette with the beautiful Art Deco dome, or the Art Nouveau dome, and so on. Or it could just be a practical department store.
Yeah.
And knowing French sensibilities and love of food, you can imagine the food is treated just as lovingly as the cosmetics and perfumes and clothing and so on. And you want to find that food floor. As you said, there's the normal groceries you'd expect to find, but there's always, it seems to me, a sort of an edible souvenir area where you get the classic traditional gifty edibles that you can have in a jar, or you could even have that deli kind of counter where you can pick up something right there and sit down and eat it, or take it back to your hotel room, or to a park in Paris and eat really good food at takeaway grocery store prices. And it's just a great practical thing to know if you want to eat smartly in Paris.
Absolutely. You know, picking up a baguette and getting a basket full of things from that food hall, and then going down to the River Seine on a summer night, it's the perfect thing. Just make sure that the can that you get has one of those openings that you can open the can. You don't have to have a can opener. And the bottle of wine, you might find it hard to get a screw top in France, but, you know, you could search and search for one.
It's an excuse to buy a corkscrew as a souvenir,
exactly.
I suppose. And travelers can do that, sit down on a free chunk of the riverfront and have their own picnic.
Absolutely. And another little tip there, if you want to be very Parisian and be like the Parisians and hang out with the young folk, is to go to Canal Saint-Martin, because that's also a fabulous spot to sit by the canal there and have your dinner. It's an amazing experience.
So our listeners can tell through your wonderful Australian-tinted French accent, that would be St. Martin's Canal, right?
There you go.
St. Martin's Canal.
Say that again. Canal Saint-Martin.
Saint-Martin. Great. I got to say, this is kind of a tangent, but when we talk about great department stores, if you go to London and you've been to Harrods, there's a department store, and the food department there is like, you'd pay admission to see that if you're a foodie, just to see how the food is displayed and celebrated. And all over Europe, you can find these department stores that have these top end food sections. Now, related to that, Andrew, is outdoor food markets. Yes. And that's something that you wrote in your book. Just as important in Paris to go to the Louvre or see them or go to the Eiffel Tower, food markets are a way of life in Paris for every Parisian. And it's here that you'll see the real Paris. Tell us about the importance of these food markets and where we might go.
Well, they are the way that you shop. I mean, it's not just Paris, it's all of France. But really, even in Paris, it's the way to get not only food that's, you know, locally grown, but also to have people. One of my favorite markets is the Bastille Market. Right in the middle of the market is some people that make crepes, and they come from Breton. So, and they come down on Thursday. They stay in a caravan outside of Paris, and they do the markets, and they're there on Sundays at the Bastille Market, and then they go back home afterwards. They do that every week. And they've always been there. And every time I'm in Paris, I'm there. Even when we first moved to Paris, we lived right near there. So I would walk every day, every Sunday to the market. But then we moved just a little bit further away. But I still made my way there every Sunday with one of the dogs.
Andrew, are these markets daily markets or 5 or 6 or 7 days a week, or are they just like a Tuesday market or something like that?
Yes, so every area will have a market on a certain day, and it's usually 2 days a week. And you can just Google in Paris market times and you will find that, but each one will be different.
I want to remind everybody who's dreaming about Paris, you're going to go to the Orsay, you're going to go to the Louvre, you're going to take a boat ride on the river, put on that list. Visit a food market and find out what day and where. The one you mentioned that you like is Bastille.
Oui.
Okay, Andrew, let's go now to food streets because, anybody who loves Paris, they'll know about Rue Montorgueil. How do you pronounce that, Montorgueil?
Montorgueil,
and I love Rue Claire and Rue de Martyr, Rue de Rosier. Paris is a collection of neighborhoods, and each neighborhood would have a street dedicated to food shops and sometimes more restaurants or sometimes more food shops, but a place where people celebrate good local food, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where you can go and be like a local, and you will find these places. I mean, even Rue Montorgueil that we just mentioned before, that street was built on the site of what used to be the Mountain of Rubbish from the previous Layard Market. And so it means Mountain of Pride because people used to think that the people that lived there were, they were proud that they were living, they were nouveau riche and living on what used to be rubbish. But now, and definitely in the last 5 years or since the pandemic, I've noticed that now the Rue Montorgueil is set up a lot more for the French. And so the foodie things that are there, they're for the French. You still have the Paris's oldest patisserie there, Stroheur patisserie, but there's lots of other things there. So you can go and you can, again, do that thing that we talked about with the department store, buy your cheese, buy your baguette, buy your wine, get some great chocolates, and head off down to the Layard Market and the Layard Park and maybe sit there and enjoy a great picnic.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're enjoying a culinary tour of Paris right now with Australian Francophile and food enthusiast Andrew Pryor. He teaches cooking courses out of his home in Western France, where he is also hosting a podcast called Fabulously Delicious, the French Food Podcast. Andrew has written a book, and it's called Paris, a Fabulous Food Guide to the World's Most Delicious City. His website is andrewpryorfabulously.com. Boy, you like the word fabulous, don't you, Andrew?
It's my motto, Rick. Whatever you do it fabulously.
Hey, we'll talk about fabulous. Let's talk about bakeries. I'm fascinated in Paris how the bakery scene is so developed and so appreciated and so competitive. And, of course, in France, you have this almost religion of you must have a fresh baguette for breakfast. Tell us about the passion for fresh baguettes.
Yeah, I know. It is a passion. It is almost a religion. And I think it partly comes from the fact that it's even in law, what is the ingredients of a baguette? So it's going back to this time after the revolution of making sure that everybody gets fed. And Parisians, especially now, they love a baguette. Many a Parisian will be seen walking around at the beginning of the day with one in their hand and then just nibbling on it on the end. And people actually will source and line up for a baguette. Each year there's a competition to have what is the best baguette in Paris. And when you're named the best baguette in Paris, you can then supply that to the Elysee for the year. But also you've got a lineup of people wanting it as well. So you not only pressure of supplying the president, but also the rest of the world, the rest of Paris.
Andrew, are baguettes still so affordable? I mean, they seem remarkably cheap compared to other things. Is it still subsidized? I mean, the French government learned 200 years ago that if you don't subsidize the bread, you're more likely to have a revolution.
Yeah. So yes, it's still more affordable to have a baguette, but they did actually just allow them to increase the price of a baguette. And I think it was about 5 or 10 cents that they were allowed to increase the price of a baguette. But that was because obviously of global crises.
Andrew, let's just finish off our discussion. It's so appetizing, really, about Paris and about the food culture by getting your expert advice on one thing we should be sure to do in Paris if we enjoy food and want to bring home a good memory.
For sure, I think we should head down to some of the gourmet and kitchen stores that are in the first arrondissement, just down near the Halles shopping centre. Some of them are some of the oldest cooking stores in Paris, but also you get baking supply stores there and you can just pick up something that you never knew that you needed. For any foodie out there that loves to bake, they will have great cake decorating items. So you might be able to pick up a set of piping tips that you might not be able to get back home that you've only seen in Paris.
That's a souvenir that keeps on giving. Every time you do a little pastry at home, you'll think, hey, I did that in Paris.
Exactly. Every time you're making a cake and a tart and you serve it to your friends, you'll be able to say, this came from Paris.
If I was coming to Paris tonight and you wanted to take me out to something kind of surprising and quirky in Paris for dinner, what would we experience together?
I would take you to Canard and Champagne. And so this is a really fabulous restaurant. It's in the passageways of Paris, so Passage Panorama. And they only serve duck and champagne, as the name suggests. And we would go there, have a confit de canard or a magret de canard and some lovely champagne together.
Oh, sign me up. Andrew Pryor, thanks so much for joining us and bon appetit.
Merci beaucoup.
See the twinkle in my eye? Just come back from France, that's why. Me and Phil went over there to spend our honeymoon. First time me and Paul and Bob. Did I like it? Have let it up. Can't say more about it than it ended up too soon. And I'd like to go again to Paris on the Seine. For Paris is a proper pantomime. And if they'd only shift the Agnew Road and plant it over there, well, I'd like to live in Paris all the time.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.